It's Saturday morning, and that was loud. We're getting some goofy things going on in the headphones today. Let's start that again. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee, and it is one of those fun days that rolls around every year. We're beginning today our ninth anniversary, our ninth year doing the show. Yay! And it's always fun to look back at that show when we first started. When we were, of course, a little antsy, I guess, a little nervous. Even though I'd been doing radio a long time, it was not with a situation where I was in the driver's seat and Adam was new at it. So we're driving out here. Both of us drive Butler. And he got here before I did. And I'm about halfway along Butler. And phone rings. So I took it on the hands-free, and it was Adam. He said, "You're not going to believe this." I said, "Well, lay it on me, whatever." He said, "We lost power at the station. There is no radio at the radio station. So what are you going to do?" We came in, and as it turned out, Angela and Howard were doing the show before us, of course. Angela and I have been doing it, I don't know, 12 years, something like that. Anyway, they were here, so instead of having to hurry up and go on air, we sat around and talked to them for a whole long time, which was kind of fun because we got to know them a bit right away. And then the electric company had told us there was a major outage around here, which was pretty obvious, I guess, and that it would be fixed. They were estimating 11:15 or 11:30, something like that. And, of course, our show was over at 11, so we didn't think too much about it until about 10:45, when the power came on unexpectedly. Whoops, and now we got 15 minutes of airtime. Nobody's set up for it, and on. It was a very rocky start to the 8-plus years now of the show, but it's always fun to
welcome to live radio.
Exactly right. You never know. You never interview kids or pets, and try never to do a show during a power outage. The little rules of thumb. Anyway, we're here and back, and those of you who've been with us for a long time, we're always grateful that you're here. And I just got a message, by the way. It says, Adam, on the internet version, I guess, Adam's introduction. Got him now? Okay, well, this is my crack research department speaking, so if he speaks again and have any problem, let me know. Otherwise, it's fixed. Thank you. Anyway, regulars, thanks for always being there. You're the reason we get up and do this for now the start of the ninth year. And if you're new to the show, whether you found it by accident or you're being told or have been told or something like that, welcome to the show. Stick around one way or the other for the whole hour, and you will undoubtedly learn something, and there's a pretty good chance that it will be something useful. There is, after all, almost no topic in the world that impacts a greater percentage of the population than money, and money in general, and money in investments, and all that stuff, very important. So that all said, we had another good week in the market. There's been quite a differing lineup, attitudes, and just about everything. And that said, I will just turn it over to Adam, and he'll tell you what he thinks about it.
Yeah, the S&P made a major break above its long-term downtrend this week. And then the Friday jobs report showed that unemployment is at a 53-year low. So if you took that on its face, you could pretty much conclude that everything is great. The economy's as strong as it's ever been. But that's not really the case. We're hearing about layoffs and a global recession. And so 2023 is shaping up to be as confusing as 2022, just the opposite. We're in a rising market instead of a falling market. And I don't know. It's really hard to determine what to think right now. It's going to be another tough year, but I'll take a tough year if the market's going up over a tough year where the market's going down, for sure. So anyways, the global economy might be in a little bit better shape than you think. If you take a look at Caterpillar, global construction giant, they just reported earnings and saw their revenue beat by 4.5%.
That's a big number for them.
Yeah. They also said that 2023 price hikes will more than offset manufacturing cost increases. Now, does that sound like a global recession is underway?
Not to this guy.
No, definitely not.
Of course, they're being favored with a tailwind called the falling dollar, and that's going to be very, very good.
It will, but companies are not going to be ordering multi-million dollar construction equipment if they're looking at a global recession.
That's
just not
going to
happen. So that's a bit of good news. Earnings season is well underway now with almost 450 companies reporting. The earnings beat rate is 66.1%, which puts it below the historical average rate. But the revenue beat rate is 60.1%, which is above the historical average. So overall, the results are really near average, which is surprising considering most people were thinking that we were in or going into a recession or in a recession, including us. It's not great news, but it also isn't terrible news. So yet another data point that's hard to unpack.
Yeah, the pricing power that we've gained over the last several months is finally starting to show up on the bottom line. As the inflation brings around prices and prices bring around inflation. So eventually companies start up by getting squeezed in this economy, but now they're starting to regain control as it settles down. And there was an interesting thing on the web this morning about the difference between deflation and disinflation. And we can talk about that later.
Okay. So despite the lackluster earnings season, the market had a pretty good week. The Dow, which outperformed last year, has not been as good in 2023. It's up 2.3% for the year, but lost 0.5% this week. The NASDAQ had a brutal 2022, down over 33%, but it's been leading the way higher in 2023, and this week was no exception. It added 3.6% to bring the total 2023 gains to 14.7% in just over a month. Not bad. The S&P is right in the middle, adding 1.5% this week to make the total gains 7.7% for 2023. So far, 2023, as I mentioned before, is just about the exact opposite of 2022. There was a ton of economic data this week, along with a Fed meeting and earnings season, which made for a lot of data for investors to digest. The Fed, for once, used some common sense and did what everyone was expecting, which was a quarter-point rate hike. And they signaled that further hikes are possible but not guaranteed, which the market really liked. So imagine that instead of trying to go out and kill the market and doing something just to do something, Jerome decided that he would do what was actually appropriate. And I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And honestly, the way things are going right now, the soft landing is looking more and more possible. And if he pulls this off, he might go from the worst Fed chair of all time to one of the better ones.
Yeah, and pigs may fly.
I don't know. Every data point that came out this week made me believe a little bit more that it was possible.
Yeah, I am going to, however, do my usual job and pick on that jobs report a little bit, because there are things that people should understand before they get too carried away. I was very pleased with his reaction to it, though. I thought it was very well muted. So, well, of course, he pre-acted. He didn't react when it comes
to But race. Also, there was a lot of other data around unemployment this week. We'll get into that after the
break.
Okay,
we'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And lines are open, 904-222-8255. If you have any questions or want to take a shot at the trivia question or just have something on your mind, you will be put to the head of the class. Trivia question this week brought to you as usual by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Cars are getting expensive, and now money's getting expensive. You put those two together, and what do you get? Bigger car payments. It stands to reason. What percentage of American car buyers are taking on a monthly payment that is four digits long? What percentage?
That is a big payment.
That is a big payment.
I hate car payments.
I've made one so many, many, many years. shudder at the thought. It's like somebody saying the word moving to you.
Yeah.
You just get that feeling
definitely.
Your backbone that you'd like forget.
But moving is a much more rare occurrence, and also the car payment lasts a lot longer.
Yes, it certainly does. And that, you know, that's not even factored into this. But some of the car loans today are out of 6 and 7 years.
Oh, most of them, actually. I think that's the new 7 years is kind of the new normal.
Take $1,000 a plus month loan for 7 years? Mm. No, thank you.
Ouch.
Anyway, that's the question. So if you can come up with it, you'll be declared the winner. All right, back to... Okay, we do have a call, so we'll wrap up afterwards. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. Congratulations on the anniversary, guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
I am sure that that first day, you guys probably had to go have a cocktail or a beer afterwards just to calm down.
You've never seen anybody.
Even though it would have been 11 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't matter.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere, right?
Yep. If you've ever seen two guys scramble when the power started coming on, we hadn't even unpacked our headphones or anything.
Oh, my God. What a stressful situation. But you know what? There you are so many years later, and you're still on the air. You've outlasted many, many people that have tried this.
Yeah.
And we really appreciate you. You make my Saturday morning when I'm out here in the fields working.
Thank you very much. But one thing it did, it made every other show look easy.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Hey, on this blimp or whatever's flying over our head, we see that in the country all the time. There's organized crime out here flying drones, and they're hunting for things to steal. And we guess what? We're not allowed to shoot the drone down either. We're prohibited by law from doing that. So welcome to the club. We've been dealing with this a long time. It's just now that the Chinese have decided to see if they can take a shot at it. So, but
you shake ridiculous. Your head and you wonder what's going on.
No, I don't more. I've had it.
Yeah,
like most people.
I hear you.
I hear you. Enjoy the show. I'll hang up, and I don't want to even take a shot at the trivia.
Okay, well, we appreciate hearing from you. Thank you.
Okay, talk to you.
Yeah, fun and games. I would really, really like to figure out what the thought pattern is, I guess, in the Pentagon these days. It's just so bizarre that they wouldn't do this. According to Biden, all you need is an AK-47 with that 10 times the usual muzzle velocity and the long range and the explosive power of that bullet.
Yeah.
I always think just one little guy out there with an AK, just boom, and it
something like that
fall right down in his backyard.
I'm just wondering what the uproar is about. You really think they can see something from a balloon that their spy satellites aren't picking up? I mean, I just don't. To me,
you can read my license plate from the satellites that are out in space.
Yeah, I don't even know why they would use such that low-tech solution.
Well, I believe some of the guys on the tube this morning nailed it. They called it a trial balloon. And I think that's the most appropriate description of this thing. They're just testing Biden over and over and over, and he fails every single test. No, that's just my opinion, by the way. And my opinion doesn't necessarily reflect that of the radio station. I'd be shocked if it didn't.
Just seems like, it's got to be diverting attention from something else. Or it's just such a non-event to me. It feels like a decoy.
The whole last 2 years have been, look over there.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's inflation. You take responsibility for inflation? No, it was already here, man. That was just yesterday. Yeah, it was here at 1.4%. Never mind.
Yeah.
We got to go to the phones. Good morning, Howard.
Good morning. How are you guys?
We're wonderful. How are you?
I'm good. I've been enjoying my retirement life.
Freezing?
And, still listening to you guys because you do such a great job of informing everyone about what's going on. I missed the thumbs up or thumbs down or thumbs sideways before before Angela and I used to put you on the show, and now she's got her own show, which I'm enjoying as well.
Yeah, I've got a, I've got your cell number. I can take a picture of Adam's thumbs and shoot it to you before every show. Or you can just listen
you know,
in, too.
I remember that day that you started the show, and we had lost power as well.
Yeah.
You guys came in wondering, oh, my God, what am I going to do?
Really?
And it was such a great time. And, you know, we have such a great friendship since that time. And you guys just are doing such a wonderful, wonderful job. So I just want to congratulate
you
on your number of years on the radio. And I do have a guest for you.
Okay, great.
With respect to the how many people or what percentage of people get car loans over $1,000. I'm going to guess 11%.
All right. That's a really big number. But it's too low.
That's my guess.
And it's too low.
Wow.
Scary, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
Well, my car loan is not that much, but my RV is.
That's a different story.
Hey, if it's so big you can't put it in a standard garage, I think the payment just reflects what value you've got there.
Well, my RV is 45 feet long, and it's a 20-year loan.
So. Yeah, that's more like a house payment,
yeah,
more like a mortgage.
I don't know. You could probably deduct the interest somehow on that these days.
I can. Indeed, I can. Yes, I can.
You can eat in it, sleep in it, and there's something else, and that creates a second home environment. Hmm. So if it's within reason, it's deductible if you're lucky enough to itemize.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yes. Well, I can do that. My accountant is well aware of that.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
Either want to buy an RV.
You know the guy who sells them now, don't you?
I'm sorry?
I say, you know the guy who sells them now, don't you? Isn't that you?
No.
Oh, you don't sell them up front? I thought you were involved in that.
No. But you have to be able to cook in it as well.
That was it. Yep.
Yes. Enjoy your show, and I'll continue to listen to it.
Well, thank you.
And we appreciate it. Yeah, thanks, Howard.
Before you go, I should say that having you guys ahead of us all these years has made a big difference. We know that the audience is growing and growing quickly because we hear it on the streets and we see people in the office. And you guys are such a good lead-in, and Angela's picked that up very well as a good lead-in. And the industries that we're in have a lot to do with finance, and it's been a very natural thing. And I keep hoping there'll be other people who want to come in and do something that's kind of like a third party on all that. But we really appreciate the work you guys did for all those years in greasing the way for us to get this thing off the ground. So it works for everybody.
Well, it does. It works for everybody. And you have great guests on the show as well with, Marshall comes on sometimes.
Yeah.
And Christine has been on your show as well.
Yep.
And The grease that axles the wheel, of course, are the Van Wees. So keep up the good work.
Thank you. You're very kind.
All right, take care.
Thanks, Howard.
Did he just say we're greasy?
Yeah, a couple of greasers talking on the radio. Well, you don't hear that term very often anymore, do you?
No.
Greasers? Anyway, carry on. You got a little more to say.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about employment. And there was a bunch of employment data this week. The first piece that came out was actually a miss, and that was the ADP report. It came in under expectations, showing just 106,000 new jobs versus 170 expected. But from there, it got progressively better. The JOLTS report, the Job Openings Labor Turnover Survey, it showed 11 million jobs open versus an expected 10.2. So
crazy, wasn't it?
Really big beat. And we're creeping back up to that all-time high that we set, which was like 12 or 13 million. So that's pretty incredible. And then initial jobless claims came in strong at 183,000 versus 195,000 expected. Anything under 250 is good. So anything under 200 is great.
That's probably the best indicator of this total strength of the job market.
Yeah. In the winter or the fourth quarter of last year, we were seeing that number start ticking up towards 250. And then all of a sudden it reversed and it's come right back down. So that's a really good sign. Continuing claims came in below expectations as well. So and then if you look at some of the other data on the jobs report, the labor force participation rate ticked up to 62.4 from 62.2. and average hours worked was up. Average hourly earnings were up 4.4% year over year. And so whatever problems we're seeing right now, they're definitely not in the employment area. There are problems, but it's not there.
Yeah, the biggest problem we have in the whole employment arena is that there are 7 million eligible for work, say, youngish gentlemen. People have decided they're just not going to work right now.
Yeah.
They're either living on leftover funds or they're staying in their parents' basement or something. But they're just not going to work. We need them to come back to work. All right, we got a little more to wrap this up, then on to other things. We'll be right back. This is the Vanwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee.
And I'm Adam Vanwee.
And we have just a couple more words to say about the jobs report. I just want to point out to everybody that January is the month that annual revisions are made to the establishment survey data, and these were very large. Anybody who has been to the BLS website on Jobs Day knows that when you get to the establishment and then household surveys, there are a whole list of statistics that would say in this month, for instance, December's number, January's number, and then the last column is difference. Well, on this report, it says December's number, January number, and then there's no difference because they're not directly comparable. They reassign a lot of jobs, and they bring up population changes that are then applied retroactively to the employment level from last March. And anyway, here's what happened in this time that makes everything to me just a little suspect. The total non-farm employment level from March 22 was revised upward by 568,000, and that's 0.3%, and the average not seasonally adjusted benchmark over the past 10 years is 0.1. But the year-over-year change on non-farm employment for March was revised from plus 6 million to plus 7.1 million seasonally adjusted. Just saying that if that 517,000 number is really close to accurate, maybe it is, maybe it's not. But next month will be a direct comparison to January. So on this show in March, we'll bring you some numbers to see if anything changes. But the other thing I wanted to mention was they also added 71,000 jobs to the last 2 months' reports. So technically, that report said it was over 600,000.
Yeah, it's a big number.
It is a big number. So, well, I want to – this is a trust but verify moment, and I'll verify in March.
Yeah, it's just the trend is – I mean, if you look at all that data – combined, the ADP report really sticks out because it's it was the one miss, but everything else was pointing upward, and it's so hard to figure out.
They have been known to issue some adjustments too.
ADP, and they just changed the way they do the report to try and be more accurate. Yeah, so I don't know.
Yeah, that's why we always caution people that anything that's determined on a monthly basis, you're better off to look at a 3 month or 4 month or rolling average of some sort, because there can be spikes and misses and statistical anomalies. But point is, if you want a job, you can get one.
Yep.
I wish more people wanted jobs.
Yeah. But I have a couple of people close to me who are looking for jobs right now, and the process of getting a job, especially when you're applying for more than your first job, walking into a local store and seeing
making enough position. Money to live on, in other words.
Yeah, it is so arduous. It's just a terrible process. Someone needs to come up with a better way to find a job, because this applying online and then you never hear anything, even though you match, it is really frustrating. If you talk to anyone who's going through a job search right now, I think you'll hear that feedback, that it's like a black hole of sending resumes.
It should definitely not be that way in a time of great need.
That's my point. If there's 11 million open jobs, I see why. Because you can't get hired because you send your resume over the internet and it goes into a black hole.
That's recession depression stuff. You know the old thing, a recession is when you're out of work, or your neighbor's out of work, and depression is when you're out of work.
Exactly.
No, nobody's out of work who doesn't, I won't even say who doesn't want to be. What I'll say is who isn't dedicated to getting a job. Because if you want one, there's 11 million out there.
Yeah.
And I'm sure sometimes you have to be able to move somewhere, although many are remote working nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that people have been doing lately is going directly to tech, and tech is doing the layoffs. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning, guys.
What's happening?
Well, nothing much, just anticipating life in this country after Biden.
Yes. Well, that's an optimistic viewpoint, and I like
it. And also just enjoying your show, and can't wait for the famous balloon to come over Florida.
Yeah, we'll see if we're important enough, won't we? We just look up in the sky the next few days, and if you see it, you know we're important.
Yes.
Although it's drifting randomly. Yeah, right.
Yeah. I just don't understand anything anymore. But be that as it may, I'll take a quick shot, if I may, at the trivia.
Uh-huh.
16%.
16%. Well, I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to give it to you.
Oh, I came in. You are generous.
And
you
I'll tell you.
For the best.
Well, I'll tell you why. The answer spot on is 15.7. So I came in and told Adam, I think I'll keep this pretty tight. So we'll go 15.5 to 15.9. He said, I'll just go 15.5 to 16. Well, there you go. Makes you the winner. So, yes.
Thank you.
Can you imagine you. All those people that taking on these long loans at over $1,000 a month? My God.
It's the stuff, for a financial planner, that is the stuff of nightmares.
It is. Even when I was young, here we go. Typical old guy.
Yeah.
Entrance. When I was young, we were just married in 1972. Our goal in life was to make $1,000 a month.
Combined.
And then we knew we'd be on easy street, meaning totally self-sufficient. And then we got there, but unfortunately then it changed to 2,000. And when we got there, it was 4,000. And we're still hunting for that. But nowadays, $1,000 car payment. Hmm.
Yeah, I know exactly why. I once sneaked in the early 60s one of my father's paychecks from Republic Aviation. Uh-huh. He was part of the electrical design team that made the F-105 that flew in Vietnam out of Republic.
Wow.
They went down because they lost all their contracts to Grumman in Bethpage next door.
Okay.
But my point is, I look at his paycheck in the early 60s. I saw he made $4 an hour, $160 a week.
Wow.
And I remember that was good money back then.
It was.
Then, you know, yeah.
Unbelievable.
Everything's relative, though. You know?
Yeah, so. Absolutely. All right. I'll put you on hold.
Let me get back to a great program, and thank you so much.
Thank you. I'll put you on hold, and we'll get your stuff and send you a little something from Mr. Bales.
Have a great weekend, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Well, that makes a lot of sense that so many people are paying $1,000 a month in car payments, because I am looking at an article here that says there are 8 million Americans that earn more than $100,000 a year. There's way more than that earn $100,000 a year, but 8 million of them are living paycheck to paycheck. How insane is that?
On a 1 to 10?
I mean, but a really easy way to do that is to pay $12,000 a year for your car.
It is. Absolutely. And then if your car is so valuable that it takes a $1,000 payment to do it, probably going to be fairly expensive to insure.
Oh, yeah, I would guess. Because you're looking at, I would say, a car value north of $75,000,
$80,000. Like a new Prius. No, not like that.
No, like a
Tesla, or a high range. You know, Ford, you can spend a lot of money on an F-150. But if you're doing that, chances are you're doing business in it, and then you're totally forgiven in my world. If you're using your vehicle to generate income and it makes your life easier, fine.
No, but a luxury SUV will easily cost in that range. But yeah, two-thirds of Americans, almost two-thirds, say they live paycheck to paycheck. What's surprising to me was only that 5% of those are earning $100,000 or more every year. That just doesn't. If you can't fit a budget in there, you're either living somewhere that's way too expensive or you're terrible with money.
I'm going to go with B for the most part. Although there are certain places. If you're making $100,000 in San Francisco or New York City.
That's what I was thinking.
Too bad, yeah.
Yeah, because that's almost below poverty line in New York.
Smile when you say that. It's true. And speaking of such things, since November, tech firms have announced 110,793 job cuts.
Okay.
So if you're looking for a job and you're looking for tech, think again.
Well, I don't know. I think there's probably other companies that are still in growth mode in the industry.
And so, it also depends on the exact nature of your expertise.
Some of those companies were pretty bloated, too. You look at the
those films that they're making for where they made one for, what the heck is it? Twitter. Here's my day at Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
I go in and pamper myself and eat for free and then do this and then pamper myself some more. And then I pick up a little red wine from the dispenser before I go home. And
where was the part where they work?
Yeah. I think they just skipped over that. Mm-hmm. You know, that famous line from Office Space. I'd say I only do 15 or 20 minutes of real work. And if you don't know that movie, get it. It's fabulous. All right, we've got to take one more break and we'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we've had a lot of fun today talking about this and that and the other things. So I got a few little bits and pieces I like to call winners and losers. Here is a winner, the state of Florida. Florida now has more jobs than New York for the first time ever. How's that?
Interesting.
Isn't it?
I think that's a trend that will continue.
I think so. And that triggered the thought for me this morning that when we moved to Florida in 1992, we could have gone pretty much anywhere we wanted to go. And we chose this area partly because we had a couple of ties here. But it was the reason, the real determining factor for us was we wanted to be somewhere, albeit in Florida, which was a major goal. But we wanted to go somewhere where people went to work, had kids, school buses traveled around, because, you know, everybody loves a yellow school bus, right? And we wanted, in other words, what we wanted a normal environment that wouldn't cause you to freeze to death. And Jacksonville and the beaches just satisfies all of that stuff. It's a very normal, functioning environment around here. So used to be, before we got here, that people went to New York because they got jobs there, and they went to Florida when they were done with their jobs and came down here to not work. Well, now they're just moving to Florida because there's work to do here, among other things.
Yeah.
I loved it.
I attended a conference in Tampa this week, and there were people there from pretty much all over the country, but almost everyone I talked to had either had plans to move to Florida or would like to move to Florida.
Really?
Or was thinking about moving to Florida. It was really interesting. And then one lady is from New York, outside of the city, but she has a second home here and has designed her firm to be both in Florida and New York and spends half the year here, half the year there.
Good to be the queen.
Yep. And she even indicated that if it were up to her, she would already live in Florida full time, but her husband wasn't ready to do that. So, but it was very interesting.
They got their roots put down here.
So yep.
They'll make it.
And then a bunch of the people who work for the firm, they all live in the Tampa area now, but they were all from somewhere else and had been here for a long time. Huh. But yeah, it was a lot of, transplants from Wisconsin, Ohio, Pennsylvania, New York. So pretty interesting, a pretty good representation of what Florida is at this point, I think.
Yeah, one of my favorite things about the last 30 years spent down here is every once in a while I have to think just for a split second what season it is. I'm going to walk the dog. Do I need a jacket? Or is it spring or fall or what? It doesn't happen to me often, but it does once in a while. And every time it happens, I chuckle because never had that problem in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
It was winter.
Yeah.
Period. Unless you could see the sun, then it was summer.
June, July, or August.
Yeah. Very interesting. This is better. All right. Now, the next one is called Losing by Winning. And I'm talking about myself and a few friends. But you know, if you've been listening a long time, how I have tracked the progress of the Secure 2.0 Act. And I was quite sure from what was going on that it was going to get mixed in with this Goliath spending thing in December. And it did. And the reason I had an interest in it was because they were raising the required minimum distribution age for retirement plans to 73, and that was going to buy me a year. So that was, I admit, very selfish and all that. But everybody in my situation was going to be helped by it also, until we read the law in January. And come to find out, by winning, we lost. I lost. We lost. Because of the idiotic way this thing was written. And I'm going to tell you what happened. The people who turned 72 in 2022 were obviously born in 1950. And though for people turning 73, turning 72, we're going to be 73. So the way I assumed it, and I couldn't find anything that would tell me I was wrong, was that we can all just skip it for last year because it's moving forward to this year. Well, that didn't work out. Come to find out, we got specifically excluded from the final draft of the law, which means that if you were born in 1950 and turned 72 in 72, that's your required a birth date, basically. But it's never your required beginning date to take a distribution. That's always by March 1st of the year after that. And that's why I thought the logical thing would be just to grandfather us in. They did not. So we have to now take two of them for this year. And I really think that was shabby. I can bring up one more first before I go back and explain this. If you are one of those people who is going to be turning 73 in 2033, it's jumping to 75, but you actually have 2 years of beginning dates. It has to be fixed in the law because they actually have you assigned to two different dates. I wish they would correct ours at the same time, but it's not going to happen. So what they said was, if you turned 73 in 2023, which I am going to, then your RMD date changes to 73. But if you were 72 in 2022, it doesn't change. It stays at 72. Now, I'm still looking for someone, and if you know anybody like this, please call me. I want to find someone who's turning 73 this year who didn't turn 72 last year. And that's what the law says. Now, is it me? So what they did in laying out the ages, they said if you were born in 1950 and that age would have come to now, your required beginning date doesn't exist for 1 year. There are no people who have a required beginning date in 2023. Theirs is now March 31st of 2024. So I, unfortunately, when I turn 73, we'll have already turned 72 a year ago. I'm done. That's it, as Levine would say, or yep. Levin would say.
Yeah,
that's
so, it. Long story short, if you were hoping to get an extra year before you had to take your RMD, you did not get that, and now you have to take two this year, probably causing you mild tax headache.
Yes, exactly right. All right, let's go back to losers, and I'll stop being so selfish for a moment. The NFT.
Non-fungible tokens.
Uh-huh. If you can explain it to anybody, 12-year-old in 5 minutes, let me know. It's one of the dumbest ideas I've ever heard, because it basically isn't anything except the notation that you own something. Well, somebody made a little ETF out of the NFTs, and the sticker's NFTZ. And strangely enough, it deals only in crypto and in these non-fungible tokens. And it's going out of business.
No.
Imagine that.
Hard to believe.
The assets have grown from a whopping $15 million up to $5
million. Wow.
Thereby making it rather difficult to pay the bills, and it's closing. So all you crypto heads out there, and I know a lot of you are very wealthy on it, if you can't explain it, you can't hold it in your hand, what the heck is it doing in your portfolio?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go on to another one, back to winners. Vanguard is now giving some of its fund shareholders their proxy voting power. And I've been on this a long time.
Yeah.
The leader of the pack in this whole thing is Vivek Ramaswamy. And he has written a couple books that I would highly recommend for people. But he says that the people who manage these funds, notably BlackRock, who these wacko leftist carbon heads, I guess I'd call them, that they have been voting the proxy shares as if they own them, and they don't. Their shareholders, the ones that hold those in their accounts, are the owners. So what they've done now is they're starting out with three of their bigger funds, and they're letting the shareholders vote. Now, you can't vote for every proxy for every company that's in a big, especially the really big ETFs, because there could be hundreds or even thousands of them. But what they're going to do is establish four categories, and you pick the category you're in. One is just do what the company says. One has some exceptions. Some have more. And the others are don't vote my shares at all. So you will start seeing more and more out there the ability for regular people to have an input in the shares they own, and then they won't be able to tell people like Elon Musk that they hold more shares in Twitter than he does, because they don't. Real people own that. I consider that a real victory for honest-to-goodness people, and I'm very happy to report it. We will see you next week at the same time. Have a good week, and this is the Ben Weefin.